and this is true, I remember distinctly thinking about Major Bernie Fisher's mission in Ashaw when I was there.
You were thinking about me.
Yeah, obviously my priorities were maybe a little misplaced, but I did have some amount of time en route to the SAR site. We had a Sandy shot down in Ashaw who was working a SAR for a Navy F-8 pilot. He was in the north end of Ashaw Valley. The Sandy was circumnavigating some weather, heading toward Da Nang, and ended up flying into an opening which was full of a flak trap. There was a 23 millimeter that caught him unawares and had several direct hits, and his airplane immediately began to come apart on him, but also there was a huge amount of smoke and fire in the cockpit, so he had very little time to do anything but to jump out. So it was one of those things where he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. But
well, it seems like with a Yankee seat, you did.
Exactly.
It's a pretty good.
And he got out okay. And
if you don't have a Yankee seat, it takes, I think it's 500-700 feet of
altitude. That's what I was wondering. Unless, and you obviously would want to arrest any sink rate if you could, but if you're out of control, you're basically...
One of the things that was concerned us today, the junk got shot down.
Yeah.
He wasn't high enough to bail out.
And that's why he chose to crack land?
Yeah. He thought, you know, things happen very quickly.
Sure.
He got radio calls. He was going to belly it in the jungle, but if you're on fire, the big air engine does a good job.
Right.
The Ramrod, but he didn't think he could do it because he's already on fire and neither did I.
Right.
And
so in that short amount of time, he was conveniently aligned, was he, with the runway? And
no, he had a turn to one.
Oh, so he was...
He just barely made it.
Okay.
In fact, it was questionable if he was going to make it or not. And then when he finally arrived over the final approach, he tried to hold his altitude as much as he could.
And then he had too much or something.
It was a little too high.
Yeah.
And I told him before we get here.
Which he did, and he slid to a stop?
Yeah, he probably slid 600 feet out of ESP and off to the right side.
Yeah.
Hit the bank.
And you've probably been asked this 1,000 times, and I don't want to... get into the territory that's already been covered, but you know, when was your mindset such that you said, I'm going to land and pick him up? Did it happen immediately, or was it something that you orbited for several minutes first, or was this all within...
He crashed on the runway, and I had to call, Hills, the command post, and tell him that we had one down. And I assumed he's killed in the crash. That was a huge ball.
Oh, so
orange fire. And then just after I made the call, it kind of blew away from the right side, and he comes smoking out across the wing, running like devil, and there's a little muddy ditch right there, and he jumped into that.
You saw it happen.
Yeah.
You were within a mile or so of the place.
I'm sure that's what had a bearing on it. You know, I knew where he was at. I watched him go in.
If there was any question in that, then you wouldn't even have considered it, right?
Well, I would have never gone into the field if I didn't know where the guy was at.
Exactly.
Because they'd be getting paid for sure.
Yeah.
And then I called for a helicopter. They said they didn't have one there, and the Marines were supporting him, so that would go by. They said, we'll have an airplane there in about 20 minutes. So then we went back to the fight with four A1s and got down in the canyon, and we were doing a pretty good job of the fort, and dumped all our bombs, and half the ammunition shot, and then I told them 10 minutes. I said, where's the helicopter? They didn't know. It might be another 20 minutes, just a question. He was on the way, but we didn't know it. And then I felt about that point, you know, there's so much ground fire, he would have never made it.
Yeah.
And just as we talked among ourselves, between him, they knew if he would have made it survive, I'm sure they'd have killed him if they died. They lost more people than people indicate by intelligence on the wires.
He wanted some... compensation, huh?
Payback.
And that's, I suppose, human nature, isn't it? But so you've made your decision.
Yeah, I thought about it, and I think, you know, there's just kind of a burning feeling that we ought to do it, but I had time to think about it. I just thought, well, this is good. We get me down there on the ground and him on the ground, and then they'll pull off in the fight, and, you know, they won't pound them like they should have pounded them. I called, we had a map in the airplane, but I called the command post for the length of the runway. I didn't know what it was, and of course they said it was 3,500 feet. My calculations are 3,000 feet I could land the airplane, but it was a mistake. It was only 2,500 feet. somebody met me in Washington a few years ago and said, I'm the fellow that made the maps over there, and I apologize. It was wrong.
Well, things changed. Maybe they added or subtracted length from the runway. You know, who knows? In a situation like that, we're not looking for, I don't know, maybe the precision wasn't what one would normally expect.
And I think Denny Haig, he's not here, but he's a good Catholic fellow. And he said when it was over, he said, I don't know if it was a Catholic or Protestant prayer, but somebody really helped us today.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of them have felt that way. I think we got a lot of help. I know I just sort of counseled my help with one.
Yeah.
I need some help.
Yeah.
And things relaxed, and I could think a little clearly. The confusion got out of the way. I knew what I had to do. And so I called John Lucas, just met him, and told him what my attention was. And John done a great job of running the show. And I told him I was going to go and pick him up, and he said he'd come. And that's important. You know, not necessarily in the air, but on the ground. Because they were all over that runway.
Well, if he just said, well, I don't think so, you know, what would that have deterred you? Have you thought that through, that if you got one of your flight members questioning that, you would have proceeded? Or was this something you were going to do?
I felt strong enough about it to do it.
But that's reassuring to have your... I'll cover your type backup,
yeah.
Because it reinforces...
And you know there's a tape on that.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a 123 that tapes it.
Okay.
And he said something about... when I was taking off, jumping ahead of the story, as I was getting ready to roll, John says, but Danny, let's make another scraping run. This is on the tape. But Johnny says, Danny says, I'm Winchester. Luke waits a minute and says, so am I. But they don't know the difference.
Yeah.
And then he says, just one of them looks like he's head up would have got him. They were right down in the grass with that big old prop chewing away.
Were they opposing your takeoff direction? So you saw them coming in as you were taking off? The other A1?
They come head on to me.
Yeah.
And just scraped the area right
that was, must have been a pretty impressive sight, too, from a ground perspective.
The thing that was, I felt, you know, was really helpful was that jumps that they got when I was on the ground, they got within 30 feet of me, real close to the airplane. But these guys strafing along right alongside of me, you know, just kept their heads down and they dug in. So it was a good day.
So you're in and out in a couple of minutes from the time you touch down until you're taken off, or is it longer than that?
Not much more than that.
Yeah.
Somebody's asked me that question. I said 10 minutes.
Time stood still, I imagine. Then things maybe seemed like one thing, but was really another.
Well, when I made the decision to go in, I landed in the wind, which is just normal. But there was so much fire and smoke coming out of the camp, and I went in over the runway, and I couldn't see it.
Oh.
I was in the smoke, and I dared to chop the power, because I might be over the trees. So I just held the power on, and when I broke out of the smoke, I was right over the runway. I just chopped the power and hit the ground, and I looked down the end of the runway, and you ain't going to stop this airplane. And so I gave it full throttle and bounced off, and then I went out the other way, a little bit downwind, but I could see a little better. I touched down at about 95, just was right on the stall. And I skidded a lot of the way down the runway. It was wet, for one thing.
Yeah.
Been raining. And the big panic came when I got to the end of the runway. I couldn't stop it.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't. The brakes were red hot. There was a little berm ahead, and it looks like small grass. And I thought, if I just stand on those brakes, I'm sure I'm going to bust something. So I eased off on the brakes a little bit and went over that berm and down the big grass. It wasn't little grass.
Oh.
And it was their fuel storage dump.
Oh.
And I hit some 55-gallon barrels and I damaged the airplane on those. But I got to turn around and go back on the runway. And I think we figured a taxi about 1,800 feet.
Uh-huh.
And I went, boy, he just jumped up and
went. Well, you knew kind of where he was, and
yeah.
He was just waiting for you to get close enough to jump out, and he knew what you were doing at that time. Probably couldn't believe his eyes.
Well, he thought I got shot down.
Oh, so he thought
he didn't
you were
realize
in trouble.
That I'd come to get him. And he thought, well, we got another one down there.
Yeah.
And so I went by him. He says 200 feet, but I don't think it was that far. But I was moving pretty fast.
Yeah.
And I hit the brakes and stopped and waited. And he got the three mirrors across the top of the airplane. Couldn't see him. I knew he started for the airplane. And they hit me several times right there, broadside. They were real close.
Yeah? You could feel the rounds impacting?
Yeah.
Feel them maybe too?
Yeah. And that's when I felt he probably got hit,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and he's down. So I unstrapped him over the right side to get him. I met him face to face. He's trying to get up on the wing, and
so you went over the right side just because it was away from the threat?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's the side that he should
over the greasy
on.
Wing.
The greasy wing. I let that jump back in, and he come up the first of all, he couldn't make it up with the airplane. I used to really want it up, so you'd never bring her back to idle.
Right.
Get her to quit.
Yeah.
And so I left him bumped up a little bit.
And he was blowing him off the wing?
Yeah. And it just didn't make it. And so I pulled her clear back to the stop, and he just come up on his hands and knees, and he put his arms and head in. He was really exhausted. And so I just stood up in the cockpit and grabbed him by the ridges.
Yeah.
He went head first.
So he doesn't know his parachute on now, does he?
No.
He left that in the airplane, right?
Yeah.
So he, fortunately, didn't have that to lug up there. But you still had yours on when you stood up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, can you fathom or imagine doing that in any other airplane you flew? Obviously, they're all other jets, right? So.
No, not really. There's a lot of desirable things. First of all, it has 2 seats in the airplane.
Exactly.
And the airplane take a tremendous beat. I just think, dead. I guess some Navy guys had about 119 bullet holes.
Yeah, I think
some of those figures are tremendous. So the airplane was a good airplane for what we were doing, but it was noisy, it was hot, it was dirty, and it didn't have updated sights.
And you didn't have the extraction seats, which I'm thinking, trying to analyze my thought process and doing some of the things I did, and I felt like that Yankee seat gave me a lot of confidence to that if I did get hit, I could get out safely, leave the airplane.
The feeling, like a lot of other airplanes, the same way. First of all, if you have to go in, you need to go ride the airplane in.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the big engine in it to help you. And I guess it's our maintenance officer who's up flying all day. Probably. The thought about that is, he had some trouble on the down one leg. He had to jump out of the airplane. And his parachute was wet, I guess, because it didn't open. And so you see that, and then you realize that, I'm not sure I'm going to jump out of an airplane.
Yeah. I remember hearing a story about an A-1 pilot. I believe it was on Christmas Day. It was much after your time, but before my time, of a pilot that jumped out of an airplane, had a good chute, but just went right through and wasn't strapped in. He'd forgotten to connect himself to the risers, which is extremely unfortunate, obviously. But so the system wasn't infallible, but it was certainly a good one if you adhered to all the normal procedures.
They realized that they needed an ejection system. Jumping out over the side.
Oh,
that's so much out of
it. In a combat environment like we were flying that, it wasn't going to work, was it? No. So, I felt like the airplane, I literally could follow it anywhere, and of course, that's one way to say it, but it would get me home, and I felt extremely confident.
I think if I had to rate airplanes, the finest airplane I've ever flown was that 104.
Uh-huh.
It was just a super pilot airplane, way before its time.
Right.
It might be interesting to, when I received the medal in Washington, I mean, I've been along to New York City, and Mayor Lindsay presented the medal of gold medal from the city of New York.
I see.
And Eddie Rickenbacker came down and visited with me for about 30 minutes. That was really special. And one of the things is, he's not a, he's a decision maker. He's analytically sharp. And he said to me somewhere on in the conversation, he says, "Trouble with you guys in Vietnam, you didn't have any competition." And I thought, what? And he says, and I'll tell you what I'm talking about. He says, those airplanes that you're flying in Vietnam are not the best airplanes in the world. A 105 is not there's no match for a MiG-21. An F-4 is no match for a MiG-21. I mean, they do a big job because we've got great pilots, but airplane-wise, they're not on par with a MiG-21 or a MiG-23. And he said, if you'd had an air war over there, we as a people would have demanded better airplanes. And he's right. They came out and done the F-15, the F-16.
Right.
They're the world's best.
Right. Well, they were, maybe. Somebody brought up last night, and I hadn't thought of it this, but they said, you know how old you thought those airplanes were you flew in Vietnam? The airplanes that they're flying today are older in numbers of years. When you think about when the F-15 came out, 1974, 75 time frame, F-16 was designed in the mid-70s, operational in 78. that's 20 years ago, you know. So we're talking about similar vintage airplanes and being employed. The A1s were only like 12 years old. When you think about that, you know, built during the 50s, 52, 53, you're employing them.
You know the E model can carry 12 people, I'm sure.
Right. And I've seen some of the things the Air Navy did to those airplanes.
I've told people that, they said, well, I don't believe it.
Did you ever have any of that crew stuff in the back in the blue room? Did you employ any of that? Because they were bolted shut when we flew the airplane.
We got some smoke flares. We used to put executive seats in the back.
Oh, you did?
We went to Nicol and Palom once, and we had to take a couple of people with us, and they just have airline seats, they put them in there.
Well, the one that is, to me, most remarkable is the one that the Navy had with the little porthole door behind the wing roof, where the little window, glass window, where the guy could look out. Apparently, they put their radar operators in the back of that place, and I'd say that's probably above and beyond as far as a crew duty position, as far as I can see. But
I think jet aircraft for low altitude work is pretty critical, you know, I think it is.
I agree with that, but do you not agree that if an airplane were able to go faster, let's say the A1 had the ability to go max speed of 350 with that load instead of 250, guys wouldn't have been flying at 250, they would have been flying at that higher speed, and I don't think they could have done nearly as good a job. Those extra 100 knots, I think, would have prevented the A1 from being the remarkable platform that it was.
I think that's right. I think there were times when we could actually see the people we were shooting.
Oh, I know I could. There was a time, and it only happened once, but I actually saw the gunner that I shot with the Su-11 minigun pod. I saw him standing in a bomb crater, which had a log across it, and he was standing up firing at me, and I saw him.
We had a place someplace, it was north of Quinon somewhere, and they had dug the trenches, and the trenches were long trenches like this. And when we got there, they run to the trenches.
Mm-hmm.
A trench should be this way, you know. They can't hit you.
Oh.
It was terrible.
So they were like in a T or an L configuration? So all you had to do was line up on one of the axes?
Just what we got.
And the A1, maybe no other airplane could have put the ordnance in there, but the A1, that's easy pickings, isn't it?
You could just fall right along the bottom.
Right. And if you're only 100 feet high, I mean, my goodness. And stray for any ordnance could have gotten them out.
That wasn't very desirable. But
yeah. Well, I find it hard to, when I try to categorize or put in context what 25 years is, for me, that's the last time I flew my A1 was on October 1st, 3 days ago, was my 25th anniversary of my final A1 flight. And so I thought about that a lot, and when I went to Vietnam in 1971, it was 25 years after the end of World War II. Okay, so here I am now, 25 years in my past, I think about Vietnam, trying to think about, to me, when I was a youngster, 22, 23, 24 years old, 25 years ago, World War II seemed like forever because it was obviously just as I was being born. I couldn't relate to it. It seemed like ancient history. But here I am, you know, 25 years now, seems like some of the things that I remember are like they happened yesterday. Or today, you know, they're so fresh, and I'm sure you have similar recollections.